as much as you don't choose your family or you don't choose your friends, whoever is choosing the agave apostles or preachers or whatever, there is some connection. There's something we have in common. Mm-hmm. We can look different. We can listen to different music, like different foods, whatever. But we connect via the agave on a higher level.
Welcome to Elixir of the Gods, Season 4. Again, it's balcony time. We have October 10th today. Tomorrow, BCB in Berlin starts, and we are taking advantage of this. Of course, with me is my co-host, Diego. Hello, Diego.
Hey, Albert. Nice being here again,
and
as usual.
We have a kind of a world premiere today, because we don't only have a guest, we also have a guest host on the show today. So maybe we start with a guest host. It's a friend of the show who already was on the show, Esteban Morales. Hello, Esteban.
Hey, hi, everybody. Esteban Morales. It's an honor to be invited to participate as a host and have the opportunity to talk and spend time, quality time in person afterward with an amazing friend that you will introduce.
Carl Rangel from Copenhagen, living in Copenhagen. Carl also has been on the show once again for a short barkeeper episode, but we are taking advantage and it's great to have you here, Carl.
Thank you so much. Great to be here and great to actually sit on the infamous balcony.
Correct.
In the cold.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still trying to be Corona conform. So that's why we chose the balcony. Carl, so why are you here in Berlin?
This year, it's everything I like about a bar show. It's small. It's less people. Quality talks. And a lot of good friends that I haven't seen for a really long time. So I decided to take a few days off and be here from Sunday to Wednesday so I can get to see everybody that I miss a lot.
Very good. And for those people who don't know you, which I doubt because, of course, everybody's listening to our world-famous podcast. But for those people who don't know you, how are you connected with agave and what do you do for a living?
What I do for a living is a much easier question. I am a bar and liquor store owner since almost 10 years. And I'm a bartender since 20 years. Somewhere along the way, I started working in a Mexican restaurant and agave found me and didn't lose me since.
You have three businesses in Copenhagen, is it right?
That's right. I have one agave-focused cocktail bar called The Barking Dog.
Mm-hmm.
There is a liquor store where we work with what we think are quality products for reasonable prices. Also with a focus on agave. It's hard to get rid of that. And then
That's Chopin, right?
That's Chopin. Mm-hmm. And then we have a...
Quick question. Yeah. So Chopin is not only online?
No. That's
Chopin
is
a physical
store.
Place.
We're online only since 3 years, I think.
Okay. I thought Chopin was online. Okay, that's very cool. Okay.
No, it's a liquor store and tasting room. So it started off as extended warehouse space for the bar and office space. And we spent so much time up there, we thought it's better to just open the doors and try to make a business of it.
Yeah,
and
of course, yeah.
We have a big tasting table where we have done all kinds of tastings, both private and when we have producers visiting. And the ethos of the shop is drink better, drink less, and you can try before you buy.
Cool. Mm. Okay.
Because so many times myself, I have invested a lot of money in a bottle and you come home and you're super excited and you open it.
Fully agree.
And it's not that good.
Oh, I just had this the other day. I can show you the bottle. And I spent $40 on a bottle of rum that I probably regretted. But you have also the third business that you have. Yeah. Let's finish it up.
Yeah.
That's a little corner bar that's called Paloma, after my youngest daughter. It's a bar that had a 2-year identity crisis where we went from being a little bakery and cafe with removed focus, mainly open in the mornings, that later became mainly open in the evenings. And we are now full-blown vermuteria. And ironically, the best-selling drink is Paloma. And we sell much more Palomas than Barking Dog.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's very cool, man.
Congratulations.
And it's a vermuteria then?
It's a vermuteria.
After used to be.
Exactly. Now it's a Paloma shop.
Paloma shop.
Exactly, a Paloma shop.
No, but the idea started after making cocktails for so many years. You kind of, you don't want to make it at home. And I still needed something complex to drink at home. And vermouth is complex enough that it's kind of a cocktail of itself. And I didn't only want to drink at home. And I wanted something that wasn't cocktail focused, so we could do quicker service, have it a bit more easy, more open, more dynamic concept. So serving vermouth, I like everything about the traditions. It goes with food, it goes early in the day. And as we become older and have more kids, it's really nice to have a few drinks during the day and be home early.
I absolutely agree. I want to tell you an experience I had just this summer, Carl. I left the kids with the grandparents. And I had a couple of days with my wife in the north coast of Spain. And I did not know they had such a tradition. But the first day we went out, every single bar, we were in Gijón in Asturias. And every single bar had a homemade vermouth. And instead of a cañita or just a beer, we were like, let's try the homemade vermouth, you know. And they were so proud when we asked for the vermouth. And we finished up drinking exclusively vermouth both days of the vacation. And of course, some of the people in the bar knew nothing about the homemade vermouth, but some other guys were so excited that we were asking for the vermouth. They were like, okay, we have done this, and this is much more high on alcohol, or this, we use these herbs, or this. And me and my wife, I must say, we were really happy drinking the vermouth. As you said, it's like a cocktail itself. You just need a piece of glass and a piece of ice, and boom, your vermouth, and there you go. It's really, really nice, yeah.
And then if you put that in the busiest side of you, you serve 10 vermouths in the same time you make one cocktail.
Yeah, for sure. yeah, of course.
I want to hook in onto the business side right away, because the last 1.5 years haven't been very graceful to the hospitality industry. So how are you still in business?
Luckily for me, I live in Denmark, and we are very well looked after, all things considered. It's not been easy and it's not been cheap, but we've gotten so much help from the government, and looking at friends outside around the world, I cannot really complain about anything.
I have the feeling too, like when we talk about Corona and the pandemic, I always had the feeling that in Denmark, people were very pragmatic about it. So they needed to do what needed to be done, but at the same time, nobody panicked or was seeing that the world is going under. So is that true, or is that just something I'm imagining?
No, I think it's a pretty good analysis. People reacted, and you know, we are Scandinavians, we follow restrictions, and you know, we all kept ourselves and we did the best we could under the circumstances. Then whether, you know, this was the right things to do, if we handle the situation perfectly, whatever, it is what it is. We cannot change it. We are here now. We're coming out on the other side fairly strong. I think the biggest toll on all of this was on people's general mental health. And I can see this all across the restaurant service industry, that it's been really hard for people mentally.
Mm. Yeah,
I think you can extrapolate that worldwide. I mean, the other part, where you were well taken care of, you cannot extrapolate that. You live in a country that really, it's you're right. I really liked your opinion on that. But the other part, you can extrapolate it to the world. You know, I think a lot of people, I think, for example, as Esteban said before, why are you here for this BCB? To see friends I haven't seen in a while, you know? And it's like, we have the time now and we have the chance to do it. So it's really, let's take advantage of that, because if not, like, life is going on and it's passing. And it's that second part you're mentioning, I think, really affected every land or every country in the world, where the restrictions gave us, we stopped seeing people. And that's complicated, you know, for everyone. You just saw the same people all the time, and that's it.
Absolutely. And the other side of what you said is, when after second lockdown, you get straight back into service and you're really busy because people want to go out. And you go from not seeing anyone to seeing way too many people.
Yeah.
And you have to be well in service. You have to be, you know, happy and fast and quick and talk to people. after a week of service, I just wanted to lock myself in the cupboard for 2 days. Like, but then you have a family.
Yeah.
I was so tired mentally after seeing so many people and switching on the service mode. It was really hard the first few months.
Switching it back on, no? After, I can understand.
Yeah.
And also with everything extra that we had to deal with checking corona passes and checking capacity and all the extra cleaning. And
what's the status right now? How do you handle in Denmark?
Right now, it's fully open.
3G or 2G? How do they... Sorry, this is Germany. Sorry, I went... Yeah. How do they operate? So if you're vaccinated or if you're recovered or it doesn't matter, what do you check? What is the
status? We don't have to check anything anymore.
Cool.
Only, I think, for another month, the clubs and large concerts have to check Corona pass or negative test.
Okay.
So, me as a tourist, I can go in Denmark and just walk in any place I want? And
no mask, no nothing.
Why I didn't do it?
you tell me.
Okay. Yeah. No mask?
No mask.
You go to the bathroom, no mask?
You walk freely. Like I even forgot to put my mask on in the airport, and they have to run up to me and say, hey, you need to put a mask on.
Okay. In Germany or in Denmark?
In Denmark.
Okay, in the airport, yeah. You do. Mm.
But
okay.
In public transport, no.
You want to make a tasting in Chopin soon?
Absolutely.
All right.
Friday?
Exactly. Like, are you really up for it or what?
Yeah, I can change my flight and do something.
I just wanted to hook in on that and then we can move on. So this is because I read that... in Denmark, like the vaccination rate is like really high, right? It's like one of the highest in the world right now. So that's why you decided to say...
I think the vaccination is pushing 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So. And also, like, since the reopening, the cases have been going down, even with the Delta virus, and like it just kept going down. It never really caught on.
Mm.
Schools opened. It didn't go up again. So they decided to do a full open... on this September 13th, I think it was.
Wow. Well done.
Well, so you're
living...
I can't
take much credit in that.
Yeah, no. See,
you're living in paradise now, right? So, like, I mean, we didn't know that it's paradise 2 years ago. It was normality for everybody, but now you have something that is very close to what we had.
I hope it stays, because at least in my opinion, it was really a mess. So I hope it stays... I really do, man.
Same.
Everywhere.
I really hope other countries follow suit and yeah. Let's get this over and done with.
I want to ask you a question about the name of the bar, Paloma. Your last daughter is also called Paloma?
Well, my first daughter is Margarita.
Okay.
And I asked her to name the bar and she gave me two choices. It was Flying Rainbow Pony or Paloma. Okay.
An LSD bar with that name would have been like really amazing.
Yes.
Like
Flying Rainbow Pony. What's that in Danish?
Fluene Rainbow Pony.
Okay. And Paloma was the other name she gave you as a possibility? Or Okay.
After her sister.
My sister's name is Paloma. And do you make the cocktail and leave it made so that people can pour? Or you make each Paloma?
Each Paloma.
Ah, okay. Mm. Okay. Oh, now I understand why you say the vermouth is a much simpler idea, like just tak, tak.
Absolutely.
See, making, yeah, okay.
But the whole idea with cocktails at Paloma is everything goes quick. If it's not two or three components, it's premixed.
Okay. That's kind of why I ask if the Paloma is fully pre-made or halfly pre-made or just immediately.
No, but Paloma is a la minute, but most other drinks are pre-made.
Paloma has been like undertaken in the industry, like a very simple, but it's a beautiful cocktail, like everybody enjoys. I don't know anyone that says I don't like Paloma, you know, and it's not common to find Paloma out there in the agave bars, you know. It's too simple that some bartenders doesn't want to make it, and it's... Sometimes we forgot that in the simple things are the beauty things.
Mm.
And it's really nice that you bring it up and also says that you are selling more Palomas than in Barking Dog, because it just makes sense for me in all everything you say.
And it's also a great drink to win over people that don't like tequila. You know, you always have these people that come up and we're allergic to tequila. Have a Paloma. You're going to love it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And both of your daughters are... named after after a cocktail. Is that coincidence or is it subconscious? Or and what did your wife say about it?
It's definitely no coincidence.
But beautiful names. Yeah. Even if Margarita is an amazing, beautiful name, and Paloma too. You know.
So two favorite drinks and two beautiful girls.
What if you had a boy and have a boy next time? I don't know if your family planning is done.
Negroni. His name would be Negroni. Like,
no, we're not expanding.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you because we went to the scene of your current life, Carl, which is your everyday life, but I wanted to go a bit into the fantasy of how did you get in contact with agave. How long ago was it immediate, or I don't want to make it too romantic, but how did it start, you know?
It started off not being romantic at all.
Okay, good.
I think first time I had tequila, I was in Spain, maybe 7 years old. My brother is 14 years older than me, and we were on holiday, and I was very fascinated because he was always hungover, and I didn't know what he meant. But every time he was hungover, he was really funny. So naturally, I wanted to be hungover. So I started asking him, so how do you get hungover? And he said, you drink tequila. So we were sitting at a restaurant, and the waiter came in and said, anybody want anything? I said, I'll have a tequila.
7 year old.
Yeah. 7 year.
And he looks at my parents, and they go like, sure.
Bring a tequila. Really?
And I had it, and instantly I just slammed my fist in the table and I was like, I'm hungover.
No, you're drunk. You're drunk, my friend.
But kind of since that moment, there was always something with tequila. It was my preferred spirit. I'm going to be honest and say I asked my dad. My dad is a truck driver, so he drove through Germany all the time. And I asked him every time when he knew I was drinking. I was like, could you please get me a bottle of tequila? I said, yeah, sure. Like, I'd rather know what you're drinking than not. And through my youth, my preferred spirit was tequila because he always gave me something extra than just being drunk.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah.
And when I finally started working as a bartender, the house shot at the bar, it was Salsa Hornitos. It was, I think at the time, the first 100% agave tequila I tried.
Okay.
For sure.
And from then, my interest of tequila grew because I went from Sierra to Salsa Hornitos, and I was like, wow, there's a massive difference.
Hey, massive.
And then I started trying different tequilas, and a bar opened just around the corner from my house. It was called Green and Red, and it was focused only on tequila.
That was London?
That was in London.
Yeah, yeah.
Green and Red.
Yeah. Henry Besson.
If you feel homesick or if you're feeling nostalgic, I have a bottle of Sierra here if you want to try it, but I wouldn't recommend.
Let's kill it later.
See, let's make some Paloma. Yeah.
No, but this bar opened and I came in for the first time. I was so fascinated. First of all, they had a really good bar team. There was some of the best bartenders in London at the time. And Dre Masso and Henry Besant was the owners, which had legendary status at the time. And they had like 200 tequilas to choose from.
And a Mexican chef,
Eric.
And El Tigre.
El Tigre as well. But
what's El Tigre?
The tiger.
He was working there, yeah. He now has his own taco shop in London.
Oh, it's a guy named El Tigre, okay.
Nicknamed, okay.
Mm.
So I started coming to this bar, just asking for drinks, and I could see that every cocktail had a different tequila. I was like, wow, this is... It's like, this is a whole new world for me.
Yeah.
So I made it my goal that I'm going to work here one day.
But you were already a bartender?
I was already a bartender.
Okay.
So I got the job in Green and Red in 2006.
So you started working for this place that you really liked?
Yeah.
So you just gave them that, like a CV, like, guys, if you ever need a barman, please contact me. I'm passionate about this.
I think it was a bit more pushy than that, but
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I came like every time I had a day off.
Okay.
Or I had time off, or I went for a drink, and you start to know the people, and I was like, I want to work here.
Okay.
I came back from holidays one day, and the bar manager calls me, and it's like, hey, this is from Green and Red. I was like, yes. See? Can you come in for a trial shift? Absolutely.
See? Tomorrow? I can come now, you know? Yeah. Okay.
And that's where... Everything just escalated. because you got to learn so much. I had real Mexican food for the first time, or probably at the time, some of the best Mexican food you could have outside of Mexico, or in Europe at least. It was
sure,
really
yeah,
good.
No, I can understand.
By far.
Sí.
Barbacoa.
And proper carnitas. Oh my God.
Legendary bar.
The Green and Red is a legendary bar. Yeah, okay.
No. And the people who works on that and in that project, they build up what agave is now in Europe.
Okay.
For sure.
Before it was anything?
Yeah. No, it was also Pacifico, something more popular, more for everybody, but Green and Red, they bring it to the next level.
Okay.
Of education, you know, these guys were very into the deep and understanding of tequila. Mezcal was not in the scene yet.
Okay.
We had one bottle of Del Maguey at the bar, and the bar manager was, if you ever touched a bottle, of course we touched a bottle, but we didn't understand really what it was. Like, no one spoke about mezcal. There was no training about it. It was just something that was completely different to tequila, okay. It was the boss's bottle. Mm.
And you know that bar as well, Esteban?
I know the bar, and I know them too. Like, I have the opportunity to meet them and still working on with them. I can call my a friend of Dre Maso and Stefan Logne that now works for Tequileño. And unfortunately, Henry Besant passed away a couple of years ago. But they always keep going to Mexico and visiting Mexico and educated themselves. And they just built a huge reputation in the cocktail scene around the world. But also with a huge passion of agave spirits. So that makes the difference with them, you know, in the worldwide cocktail club company. Yeah. You remember that, you know? They built this company called Worldwide Cocktail Club.
Yeah, with Charles Vexent as well.
Yeah, but it was the first group of international bartenders that really keep an eye on what agave has to offer.
Okay.
And they later started Altos Tequila.
Okay.
Together with Pernod Ricard, they set up a really good training program called the Tahona Society, where they went around all over the world and like, this is like Eastern Europe. They went to Ukraine and like really trained people in agave. And I think they did a program that at the time it was unseen in any other kind of spirit.
I guess like agave spirits probably need kind of the most education, or am I wrong with that?
I think that the difference is that the leading people working with agave, they don't do it out of business interest purely. Mm. Like, it's more of a passionate product, their passion for the product, that the brand is not important. The brand is secondary. It's the category that's important. And if you take that into other spirits categories, it's all about the brand.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's,
I'm on that.
You see, amen.
So, red and green, or green and red?
Green and red, yeah. The flag, the Mexican flag is green and red, so I guess it has to do some. Does
yes,
it have to?
Completely.
See, okay, no.
The name actually comes from, it was on the corner of Bethnal Green Road and Red Church Street, and it just so happens to be the color of the flag.
Ah, okay.
Oh, Bethnal,
that's romantic.
Green, I know.
Before you weren't romantic, now you're being romantic. It's like, that's okay. That's very cool.
Scandinavian being romantic. So amazing. That was your first like professional gig or professional gig on agave related in, that was in London and in 2006.
Yes. Yeah. And the blessing and the curse with this bar was, it was the kind of bar where every bartender who came to the bar, they came to check your knowledge. Mm-hmm. So you had to read up about everything. And they'll seek out a dusty bottle on the back bar and they come in, act like they don't know anything, and they ask about it, and then they know everything about that bottle.
Okay.
So just for fun, at the time, we started like categorizing the back bar by nom. And then we change it up and categorize it by the alphabet just to like keep ourselves on the toes all the time.
Okay. Like a bibliothèque.
Yeah.
A bit. Just to, yeah. Okay. you keep track also of your knowledge, because it's like, ah, okay, I don't remember what I heard about this one or read about this one or was explained about this one, but I better check it again because I might be asked this weekend, you know? So yes, it's interesting. Exactly. Okay, okay.
And were you in Mexico before you started that in 2006 or
no,
was it later?
First time in Mexico was in 2008. And I flew into Guadalajara and I spent 6 weeks just visiting distilleries. I think we went to 26 distilleries and we spent a little bit of time on the beach. And after you've been to Mexico and you're already in love with agave spirits, there's no turning back.
Sayulita.
Sayulita.
What does that mean?
It's a town.
It's a beach. It's a really nice beach town. And I think we met that trip, right?
Yes. This is the first time we went to Gulala.
Yep.
A bar that you used to own. So you're still in the same space?
No, no way.
No, you did it. You did another bar in that space.
Yeah, 400 Rabbits, yep. And Mosquito Mezcal afterwards.
But that's finished?
Yeah, that's finished too. No more service for myself. It was 100% into the spirits. I couldn't keep going in the service industry.
And that was Alex Fitzsimmons that brought me there. Do you remember he used to import
and Eric Martinez? Yeah.
So you came
friend.
To Gulala?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I even made drinks in Gulala in 2008.
Yeah, you do.
You were behind the bar?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. That's even cooler. Gulala, as an outsider, he speaks about Gulala. He was the owner, you know?
So Esteban was the owner of Gulala.
The owner of Gulala, yeah. And the chef, the head chef.
Mm-hmm.
So Esteban can tell the history, but he can tell it later. But Esteban comes from a chef school, self-made chef school, you know? He can explain later, but most of was creative and learning, but very creative. You could see it in Gulala. So in Gulala, he was the head chef. And it became a thing in the city, you know, because there were a couple of restaurants like making contemporary or evolved Mexican cuisine, you know. And Gulala went into this wave. When I say this wave, there were 3 or 4, you know. There were not like 20, you know. Mm-hmm. It was the beginning of something that now you have like 40. But it was the beginning of that. And it became a thing between the young people, and I'm his age because I'm from his generation, and it became a thing, and it became a very popular place. How many people fitted in Gulala back
200.
Then? It was a big place, right? Mm. So, and it got packed. Packed. You wanted to go to Gulala once, twice a month, you know? So it's really nice that you felt the Gulala experience because it was quite sudden, you know? How long did Gulala lasted? Like 3 years, four?
From 2006 to 2011.
Yeah.
5 years.
5 years, exactly. 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And the good thing is, like, in the same year that Carl has visited us, it was the year that I fall in love with agave too, in a deep way, you know? It was the only place that has, like, a proper... At least for Mexico, a proper cocktail program. So most of the bartenders that come visit the city, they find a way to visit us. But we used to work with Pernod Ricard too. So everything in Pernod Ricard for cocktail price, it were in our menu. But 2008 was also my year of changing it more into the tequila and mezcal. Mm. You know, it was the year that also started distributing in the city some brands like Alipus and etc. I don't want to go there, but it just makes sense. And I wanted to say it, you know, that Carl visit, and it was also his year, like getting deep into the tequila, and it was also our year of getting deep into other agave spirits, you know, more than tequila.
So you have some similarities.
You share that.
You share the path in a way.
Yeah. And we've been friends and in touch and in communication since that.
Absolutely. And I remember on my second trip to Mexico, which was in 2010, I wanted to take my girlfriend there. And we met Esteban and we bought mezcal off the back of your truck.
In like plastic bottles? And
No. It was Alipus at the time.
Okay.
And you had it in the back of your truck. I think you just started like distributing.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
We had a lot of mezcal on the trip. And it was the first time I brought mezcal back from Mexico and put it in the bar back home.
what sounds more amazing to me, it's like we're talking 2010. This category was being born. Just locate yourselves back then. We're talking about a category that today, there is like at least in BCB, 5 to 7 stands for this category, you know? Which is not big because there is 50 for other, you know, jeans and shit. But 2010, this guy who is an expert on the subject was drinking out of the truck of this guy who is another expert who were starting making their beginnings in the industry. Like, cool story, man. I don't know. It's like really a cool story. Yeah.
So Diego was pointing at
they was living in Spain.
Carl first.
Yeah.
Who was the guy buying and Esteban was selling. So just, I need to visualize, I need to create
exactly,
a picture
exactly.
in our listener's head. And I was also in the US between 2008 and 2010. And I swear to you, I never heard the word mezcal once when I was there.
If you go today,
you were in Ohio?
I was in Washington, D.C., so...
No. You're just kidding.
I don't know, but I... Maybe at that point I didn't have such an interest in high volume spirits as well, but I met mezcal for the first time after I moved to Berlin in probably 2015, 2016. So
the truth is, like, takes 20 years to make this happen, and it's not just a single effort. Like Carl explained before, this couldn't happen with all the voices that believes that it is the brand that doesn't matter, but is the category that is truly matter. So talk about category before you talk about your brand is what that makes mezcal happen at the very beginning. And yeah, it took long time, you know. But Alipus was one of the first brands that hit the international markets all over and has 21 year old, you know.
Red and green, then you went to Mexico for the first time, then you met this gentleman Esteban, and then what happened next?
What happened next, it's funny because on the plane over here, we have a little mezcal club where once a month we send out a bottle of a half bottle of mezcal, and I write a letter every time. It's always a mezcal that somehow was special to me. And this time it was from Los Danzantes.
Which one?
Aroqueño.
Okay.
From Karina.
I have a bottle here. So
you have it.
It's really good.
It's really good, yeah.
But 11 years ago, I was on the same plane on my way over to BCB. It was a very different BCB back then. And I meet an old friend I haven't seen for a while. He was into agave a lot at the time. He works in Cologne. His name is Tom Jakhertz.
I know him too. He's a really good friend.
Yeah. And I ran into him at the show and he was like, dude, you have to meet this guy called Axel. He has crazy mezcal. But I can't introduce you because I need to run to the airport. But here's his number. And I was like, okay, cool. And I keep walking around the show a little bit. And I bump into a guy with stray hair and a tracksuit. And I look at him and I just go, Axel? And he goes, Carl. So I don't have time to talk. But here's a bag of mezcal.
Really?
And he gives me like 10 samples. It was Real Minero and Alipus and a couple of Dasantes.
Okay.
It sounds like Axel.
Sí.
Definitely it was Axel. Yeah.
And I don't think too much of it. I think that was really strange. We just bump into each other, like literally shoulder to shoulder. And I come home and I decide to do a tasting with a few of my friends. And once we tried these products, we were mind blown.
Mm.
It was me and three other bartenders, and we never tried anything like it. And it just so happened that at the time, one of my very good friends now, he just started working for an import company. I took some of the leftover samples over to his bosses, said, you need to import this so that we can have this in our bars. And
already you were behind the bar. So you were saying, like, I would buy it from
yeah.
If you bring it,
yeah,
I'll buy it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I was working in a bar called Oak Room at the time. It was fairly high volume. I knew I could do one or two cases a month, like if I pushed it, and just bring in enough for me and a little bit to sell, and we're good. And
sorry, one case was for me, the other was for the bar.
And it also so happens that the Alipus was what I bought from Esteban in the back of his truck.
It was the same stuff.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me, and I think maybe that goes back to what Esteban says about pushing the category and not pushing the brand. Maybe at that time it seemed completely strange to you that a guy you've only met through hearsay and you bump into him and he gives you a sample. Super weird, right?
There's another connection here that is pretty strange, because later when we get these bottles, there was some Piedra Almas as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the bottles in, and my name is Karl Wrangel, mm-hmm. and the address on the bottle is Wrangelstrasse.
Yeah.
He mentioned it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was something that felt that this has to be, for some reason, this.
Yeah, but what I wanted to say is this trust that people put into you. Like, if you have this agave mind, so there is, from the beginning, there's a certain level of trust into other people. So if you meet somebody who's also in agave, there's already some form of, like,
connection.
Relationship established. It's like, okay, you're in the same stuff. It's like, if you're into the same music than I am, you must be a good person, which is not true, but maybe it's true.
It is true.
But yeah. You know, I really like the connection you're making, Albert. It is a bit like, maybe we can connect on some level.
Empathy.
But there's also the saying, like, if we're going to take this a little spiritual, there's the saying that you don't find Mezcal, Mezcal finds you, right? Mm.
Even if Carl has like an serial killer face, if he likes Mezcal, you know.
Serial killer face.
You bet.
We'll share a picture of Carl, you know? Guys judge.
Nobody, don't judge him.
But I think somewhere along the line, like, as much as you don't choose your family or you don't choose your friends, whoever is choosing the agave apostles or preachers or whatever, there is some connection. There is something we have in common.
Mm.
We can look different. We can listen to different music, like different foods, whatever. But we connect via the agave on a higher level.
Mm. I guess that's today something that will disappear tomorrow. You know, if the category grows a lot, then this will disappear. This is, how do you call that? If the category grows too much, then this feeling of having a connection with another person that is in the agave world will disappear, because there will be too many people, you know, and it's...
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't believe that.
No? You feel straight away when someone is genuine.
And
But nowadays you see a lot of people that you know that they are doing agave, and you know that they're doing agave...
No, but the family is still a family.
Sorry?
The family is still a family.
No, there, yes, of course. There,
but,
yes.
No.
Tomorrow, in best way.
People with no heart will never become a part of your family.
To give you an example.
True.
Tequila is a 300 million
yes.
liters.
Yes. And if category. Tomorrow an executive from Tequila Cuervo
we don't give a shit about Cuervo. But we give a shit about the families that owns tequilas that spend quality time with us. As a friends,
yes,
as a
yes,
partners, yes. as a co-workers, as a...
No, there, of course.
As an agave family, dude. You know, we spend quality time with Camarenas, with Guillermo Sousa, with Stefano, with Sergio, with so many people that it doesn't matter that the category grows. It matters the human quality prevails. That's yes. something that we cannot lose.
In the industry, yeah.
We work with people in the service. Yeah. So Carl's being a bar owner, a restaurant owner, or service, you work with people. So empathy and the touch with people never ends. And that's the most important thing. Doesn't matter how big you are, it's how you treat the other people and how the other people treat you. So even if Mezcal grows, because need to grow, it's a category that you cannot stop anymore. And you don't want to stop, because that means money for the families in the rural areas of Mexico. And they need to grow in sales, grow in profits, and pay their bills. That doesn't mean that this is going to end. Not even close.
Maybe, here's a hypothesis, and maybe I edit myself out in a minute, but maybe it has to do with values that we share. So, like, the families that produce tequila in a certain way, they care about the quality of a product. And you as a bartender, maybe you care about the people that are in your bar, that the next day when they wake up, that they feel good and they had also enjoyed a quality product. So, do you care about the people that come to your bar so that they feel okay the next day. And maybe it's something that connects us. I'm not sure. Maybe it's the tequila talking right now, but...
But I think as both of you say, like it goes back to empathy and showing respect for other people's work and who other people are. And if you're willing to fully respect someone and they respect you back, then do you need much more?
No, I don't think so. I agree.
And we connect via the spirit, which is our stronger bond,
yeah,
I guess.
And which is nice is that... expression spirit also has like several meanings, right?
Correct.
So yeah. There is something metaphysical to it as well, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we on your journey right now? So
2010 in Mexico.
Yeah, 2010.
Back of a truck.
Yeah, back of a truck.
Exactly, back of a truck.
Dodgy Mexico, but really lovely Mexico.
Rolling a joint.
No, but then we moved back to Copenhagen. My friend works for this import company.
This is out of record. Do you marry that girlfriend you visit Mexico at the time?
We're still together. We're still not married.
So she's the mom of your beautiful daughters. That's amazing too.
Okay.
But that's cool too.
Yeah, that was a
so you can record.
You were walking on you were walking on thin ice on that question. Like,
yeah.
If it's not, he raises.
Yeah, you can.
Well. Okay. Well done, though. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. That's great. So she enjoyed Mexico as you.
She enjoyed Mexico very much, but not mezcal as much.
That takes time, dude.
Yeah,
it's not an easy thing.
No, and it's not a passion everybody has. Also, it's maybe. She
can recognize that.
But we've been back to Mexico since. We went to Oaxaca together with Margarita when she was a year and a half and traveled a little bit around Oaxaca. And now I want to wait a couple of years until Paloma is a little older just so we can travel a bit more.
You are very welcoming with us. I have kids too, you know it. So we can do some camping close to the beach and visit producers. And
I'll take you up on that.
Yeah.
Let us know when you travel. I have kids too, and you don't have any, but let's go on that trip.
Bring the cats.
Bring the cats, yeah. No, they would be terrified traveling, but...
No, that would be... I mean, that's a very nice trip.
Production of mezcal has a big relationship with the elements, fire, air, water, earth. So when you take the kids to the distillery, they just get crazy.
I can imagine.
Some... You know, they play with the dirt, with the clay.
Rocks and,
rocks. With the agave, with the water, with the mud.
That I did live as a kid because when I was very young, not very young, but I was like between the ages of 8 and maybe 18, I used to go to the ranch and my father had an agave ranch. It was blue agave all the way because I'm from Guadalajara and the ranch was of blue agave. But I remember those things, even like driving a tractor when I was 12, you know? And he was like, my father was like, no, you cannot hurt yourself. Just cut the weeds in between the agaves, cut them on the tractor. You don't have to turn anything. Just go straight and just do it. It gets boring after some time. It's like that. What the fuck? You do it, man. This is boring work, but okay. And I also remember going down to the destilerias and knowing the people and like, it's really human, you know? It's everything about it is like really this arid scenario you're traveling through. It's also very beautiful. I don't know.
I remember when... that you said that, and it has nothing to do with the podcast, but I just wanted to tell the story. It's a funny story. I was probably smaller than 8, younger than 8, and I grew up on a farm. And one day, my dad was like not far from the house. He was cutting down some trees, and he ran out of gas. And he like get me the canister of gas, and it was like this canister, and it was too heavy for me. I could lift it, but it was too heavy for me. So I went up on the tractor with the canister and I started the tractor myself. And I knew technically how it all worked. So I drove there to my father and they're all panicked and freaked out. Like, how did you do this? But everything went well. Different story, different time. Nothing to do with agave. But
wait, he told you to bring the canister. You got the job done.
I got the job done, exactly. So
no, but it doesn't have to be agave. It's just the contact with earth, I think, that Esteban is... And it has a lot to do with what you're saying, Albert. In general, it's just like this we live in cities. Yeah. And this contact you have when you get out of the city and time is much slower, and some things that for you are granted change. Mm. They do change, you know, especially time and the way people react to the conversation and everything. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's part of this human contact that maybe before we were speaking about where in the end, you're the last human contact. Now I'm speaking to Carl. You guys cannot see this. It's a conversation, but now I'm speaking to Carl. You're like the last on a chain. What's one piece of the chain? How do you call that? The last
link.
A link. Un eslabón. A link. You're like the last link before a person tries something new. Okay? So you're basically like a doctor trying a medicine on a patient, you know? But a medicine that... it's kind of true. So because in this case, you're not a doctor, like a neurologist. You're like a psychologist, you know? A person comes to you and they tell you, like, I'm not feeling good, man. This week was kind of... I'm feeling off, you know? And you're like, try this, you know? I can imagine, I've never worked in the industry, Carl. I'm speaking from maybe my bones, you know? I don't know anything about it. But it's like kind of a feeling of saying, here, man, comfort yourself, not by drinking, but by tasting this thing that may distract your mind from your heavy, very heavy week you were speaking about before, you know?
This became very apparent to me when I was in Oaxaca for the first time. So me and Max, my good friend, who we do this agave travel with in Denmark, we went to Oaxaca the first time in 2013.
Okay.
Because we got invited to speak at BCB about mezcal.
That same year?
Yeah. Okay. And we knew about mezcal, but we'd never been to Oaxaca. So it's like, how can we possibly go on the stage at BCB and talk about mezcal? We haven't been there. And BCB, they paid the flight ticket, right, to come to Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, we're in Oaxaca at the time, so you're going to have to pay the ticket from there.
And
they bought it, so we got ourselves a ticket to Oaxaca and back. So we went for, 16 days and visited all the producers that we're going to talk about, did as much research as we could, and we went straight to Berlin and do the talk.
Awesome. Basically, right off the bat, so you sucked in the knowledge and then you...
Yeah, we came in late and we had a speech the next day.
Okay.
And
how was the talk?
It was a good talk. It was... we are technically very bad with making presentations, especially at the time. So we made a slideshow with photos as a video... that was for like an hour or something. I don't know. It went really well.
I felt like it went really well. I do want to go deep on this, Carl. Sorry if I ask again.
Please.
I feel like when I go to a bar, it's my experience, okay? I feel like they are prescribing medicine.
Yes.
That's why I said doctor, you know, maybe.
Yes. So this comes back to the experience we had in Oaxaca. On this trip. So
okay.
On my birthday, we went to Mezcaloteca. And I'm not sure if it's like that now, but before you had to book a time.
It's the same.
Yeah. So we booked a time slot and they fairly quickly realized, okay, you guys, you know a little bit about Mezcal. Maybe like you don't have to leave after an hour.
Stay.
Yes. So it was David working at the time.
Yep, I know him. Yeah,
I can't remember his surname now, but David was working there. He's very spiritual, and after a while, like everybody had left, and it was after hours, and he was like, "Okay, I'm gonna take you guys on an emotional trip," and we were maybe 10 mezcals deep, and he starts altering the whole mood in the room just by choosing different types of mezcal. And, you know, some were really introvert. We started talking really deep, all three of us, and it got quiet, and you started thinking a lot about all your answers. And then he changed it up. He poured some other mezcal and it got super lively. And we started laughing and telling jokes. And then he like put us on another downward slope. And he was controlling the mood.
Yeah, yeah, like a DJ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a doctor. Yeah.
He
yeah,
was
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
And since then, I fully understand what you're referencing. Yes.
Esteban is showing a picture right now from
David Castilla.
David Castilla. Okay. Yeah.
I do have this feeling, man, that you go to the doctor when you feel sick, but you go to the bar when you're not sick. But that doesn't mean that maybe you're not feeling a little off. We have everyday lives and you don't have to be sick.
So another reference, what is the reason you go to a fine dining restaurant? You want an experience in flavor that you wouldn't get. You don't go there because you're hungry, right?
No, you're right, yeah.
And I think when it comes to mezcal as a spirit, if you go to like a serious bar, a serious tasting, that is a similar thing. We take you on an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to be open for it. And a lot of times if you go to a busy bar, it makes no sense to order the most complex mezcal because it's not the setting and you're not in the mood for it. So it's not going to give you its full experience.
Absolutely.
So in bars, like I love to drink a little bit more simple espadin or a good tequila, or if it's a quiet bar and it's like really cozy and with a friend, we can drink something complex. But if it's busy, it's a waste
of mezcal. Absolutely, yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right in what you say.
Yeah.
To go deep on that, like many of us, sorry to jump into this like that, but we forgot why we call these liquid spirits. It is not a something that just happened, you know. Old school cultures choose the names. In Spanish, spirituosas.
In German, it's Geist, and Geist can be both a drink, like a high alcohol drink. But it's also, it's the mind, and it's also like a spectre, like a Geist, a ghost, you know.
Perfect. So it has this connection of a spirit.
Yeah.
And in English, spirits. And if you go through the languages, you will find the connection of why we call these spirits. Okay. And how we just, as a culture, Occidental culture, we just make this abuse. As an expression, like something simple, and it's not simple. You know, we know now that many people is getting very geek into the weed, and they know if it's sativa or indica and how they react in your body, and if you want to mix it and how percentual of each you want to get higher as you want. But I don't saw that happen in alcohol because it has been so many years to be commune used that we simplified this drug. But this drug that is beautiful touch your spirit and touch your soul at the same way that other drugs do. And we need to get deep on that understanding of how this alcohol affects in your body and understanding the complexity of the intoxication of alcohol in your brain and your body and your blood and how you feel about it and get pros on the intoxication of alcohol. This is not a booze. This is an spirit of a plant and of a fruit, of a grain that gives you different layers of communication with different perspectives.
Or parts of yourself.
And
because the communication is with yourself.
Don't make alcohol something simple from every day. Mm. We need to understand alcohol and the intoxication of alcohols as something great.
Special, yeah.
Especially if you want to use that name, but greatest.
Yeah.
Not just a simple use. That's the important part.
Not a simple consumable.
Yeah.
So not a hard seltzer.
Exactly. You explained it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Let's go there. And I think mezcal has the chance to give this back to the whole industry. Don't use this as a simple thing. Pay a respect.
Mm.
Give the time to understand how this intoxicate yourself and understand what happened in your brain and in your body when you get high in alcohol, you know? it's something that I always like to push.
For sure. And as we getting slowly more in touch with nature and the craft of how we use nature to make produce, we should recognize here that the agave has been on this planet for like 12 million years and sucking up genetic memory until recently we start using it for making spirits and foods. And 12 million years of genetic memory. We joined the planet 6 million years later.
Yes, and we...
just and only.
And at that point, we just learned how to use a stick to be a bit, you know, have a bigger range and maybe be a bit safer from the enemy. So we didn't really understand very much of it. So I think we just started to rise above a little bit of our instincts and started to become intelligent and becoming geniuses in a way. So
and I think it's only something like, please correct me if I'm wrong, it's something like 11,000 years ago that we actually started using the agave for foods or fermenting it or like started using it for decorations. And that's almost 12 million years untouched.
Do you think that we as humans or our ancestors, that they... 10 or 6 million years ago, do you think they were eating agave? So, and then later we started to understand that there's more use into it, so that there is, you know, to use it as for fiber or for tools other than just getting the sugar and the nutrition out of it.
I'm pretty confident that it took at least until we figured out how to make fire to be able to utilize the agave.
Mm.
The raw plant can be used anything digestible. See.
You cannot eat agave raw.
Yeah.
No. That would be impossible. I'm late on the conversation, but yeah. Raw, no. Some insects can, but no, not human consumption, no. That would be impossible.
Yeah.
Very complicated, at least.
Okay. Oh, man, we digressed a lot, but that's what I love about this kind of conversations. And this is actually the nice thing of being actually physically together to...
See, this changes everything.
This changes everything.
Everything.
This is...
The magic balcony.
Yeah, the magic...
The atmosphere of being together, Carl. Yes. It's like... It's
you can't... And
in the balcony, I agree with you. In the balcony is perfect tonight.
Yeah.
But being together, man, it's just like the conversation can flow. And it doesn't matter if maybe something you said, maybe I can ask you later. And I'm not feeling like pressure to be like, no, but remember this. No. Maybe later, when we keep on talking, I'll ask you about this thing that that you said and I it kept in my mind. But when you're not together and you're talking through a camera, it's like, I have to interrupt you because this is a question I need to... And it's like, come on, it's not so natural, you know?
I wanted to go back a little bit to your history. So when did the barking dog start? What year was that?
So I made a rule for myself. Because I'm Scandinavian and I need to live by rules somehow.
I'm a compulsive list maker.
So I said, never ever open a bar before you're 30.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just going to party it away. So on my 30th birthday, I signed a contract for the dog.
Okay.
And when was that?
22nd of September, 2011.
Wow. Okay.
And it, of course, took a while to build. So we opened in... Started opening somewhere around February 2012 and officially opened 20th of May.
Bro, you are about to make 10 years.
We're about to make 10 years.
So congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
It's not easy. No? It's not easy in any sense to be out there in the service for 10 years or even less. So fucking yeah. Congratulations. No,
it's been hard on many levels. First of all, Denmark is a small country. We are about the size of Berlin in population.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, you have here almost 5 million people now.
3.5, but
three
if
and
you half, take
okay.
everything...
3.5, but...
but if you take...
We don't know about the dark numbers, so officially 3.5.
Okay, yeah. So we are 6 million people in Denmark.
Mm.
So Guadalajara City.
Mm.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, selling a very niche product in a cocktail bar, which is a niche bar...
Yeah. In a niche city.
In an area that wasn't popular, on a side street in the area, in a basement, with no outdoor seating, and literally not allowed to put any signs outside. It's a little uphill.
Yeah.
But people welcomed us really, really well. And it's been great, like, since day one.
And I miss being there, dude. Like, if you walk in, you just go to the stairs, going down to the basement of this building, and then you feel this welcoming environment that makes you feel home, and you know you want to drink there. It's something that happens in Barking Dog for sure instantly. When you walk in, they welcome you without saying a word. So
thank you so much.
That's important part of being in the service industry, you know, is make people feeling home. And you do it very well.
Yeah, those feelings arise. I agree.
And Chopin was, when did Chopin start?
So Chopin was three and a half years later.
14, and 15, around?
15, I think January 15, we opened the door for the first time. And somewhere around maybe April, we actually were like functioning as a shop.
Y Paloma?
And then Paloma, another 3 years later. So we got the space January 18.
Okay.
And it was a butchery before. And the butcher walked into shop and he said, I've been checking you guys out for the last half year. And I think you're doing great for the local community. You should take my shop.
Really?
And that's cool. And we got a good deal and we took it, but we didn't know what to do. So for half a year, we were just walking up there, kind of exposing bricks, hammering off the walls, and I try to build a plan. And it's further away in the neighborhood. Like, the neighborhood stops 250 meters before Paloma. That's where everything stops. After that, it's just residential. And then there's this one little corner where we have this little bar. It's like 40 square meters.
Very small.
And we sit maybe 60 people outside. And this is what kept us going through all of Corona.
Okay.
People were very confident sitting outside. Okay. But we could have, I think it was 14 people inside, but we could have 60 outside.
Okay.
Cool.
And people were sitting outside in winter. It was raining. I remember this one night from late November last year. It was super cold. It was raining. And we had a full outside. People were really? They've sat in ski gear.
Just
you could tell people put ski gear on. It's like, we're going to sit outside. We're going to have our drinks.
I can understand, man. I can understand. It's the only place to go. You go. It's the only place to go. I will go, you know?
And I have to add as well that they all within, 600 meters of each other. So from Chopin, you have 300 meters to the left is Barking Dog, and 300 meters to the right is Paloma.
Okay. Very good, man. That's very healthy for the...
It's easy. It makes it easy having a family
life. Of course.
I do service running at Paloma, business. My family comes up and have dinner, and I get to see the kids. And
Absolutely, Carl. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, and now this is going to be a little posh after Carl has been very humble, but this is going to be a little posh, but your bar... Okay, exactly. Can you give us your credit card number?
I'm going to answer that question. And
Wait. Can you ask again, having the actual microphone asked about, please?
No, but
please,
Carl.
I ask you, please. Sí. Please.
Do it.
He
went the moment. No, but Carl.
Corona gave me a pay raise, put it that way. For the first time in 10 years.
We're all aware that you got a really nice prize, man. I don't know. Recognition, I would say, a really nice recognition for the Barking Dog. How did that come? Those news come to the bar. Did it help, like being in a magazine and saying you're one of the best tequila mezcal bars in the world? Has first explain the prize, because that would be interesting just to understand exactly what, not the prize but the recognition. What does it mean? What were they looking for in this recognition?
To be honest, I have no idea.
Okay.
I didn't know this prize was out, and it got sent to me by an American friend that fell over this article.
Okay.
That I think by the time it got to me was a year old.
Ah, okay.
Of course, when you get recognized for something within your niche, that really means something.
Yeah.
And then you can look at this list and you can see there's a lot of places missing from that list as well.
See, of course.
And you can always say who deserves it the most. It was great to get recognized within your niche. Like I felt really proud just to be out there in any list
that Absolutely.
Is about tequila bars.
I'm not asking for you to go peacock on it, but I'm asking because it was like a worldwide competition where your bar was recognized and it was like, okay, no mames. It must feel in your skin when you're a bar owner and you're talking about like starting, like really building it up and blah, blah, blah. And then having this recognition is like that they acknowledge all the work behind and all the, not only the work you spend in the bar and in the cocktails, but all the training you have had to do so that that cocktail specifically tastes that way, because you're taking into consideration much more things than just what the color of the bottle, you know. It's like there's a lot going around.
I think being in Denmark, which is really far away from Mexico, and getting recognized for good work with a Mexican product, it's that brought me joy. Like usually I don't care about lists or prices, but to get recognized for something that you work hard for, that meant something. And it had nothing to do with cocktails, it had nothing to do with probably atmosphere, but for someone to say that we recognize that a little bar in Denmark is doing great work for our category of agave spirits, that was really cool.
Yeah
that was really cool.
By the way, we're packed, we have a line to entrance, and we don't know the fucking magazine that published that.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
The fucking shit that matters, you know? That the people around the bar recognize the bar and go there and spend their time and money. Yeah, I can get it, definitely. Like, sometimes there is so many magazines doing recognitions just to sell themselves.
True.
Not to truly, as Carl well explained it, not because the bar doesn't go there, you know, just
no,
because...
No, no, you already paid your respects to Carl's bar already, yeah, we understand that, yeah.
Just because they sell the least.
Yeah.
As they can have the voice to choose a list.
Yeah.
And
you're
it's
right,
quite complicated.
Yeah.
Carl, what is next for you? We are in a 3-year cycle, so...
we decided this 3-year cycle, we're not going to expand.
I
think on a serious note, right now, we've had really big problems with just finding staff. And by the looks of it, just yesterday, I think we finally nailed the 4th member of staff. And that means a lot for the bar. So when she signs the contract, then we'll start training again. And then it's a new team, new ambitions. But focus is 100% on getting the team up and running so the bar can run comfortably. So the 2 bartenders we have that have been working nonstop since lockdown, they can have a day off.
Yeah. Cheers to you guys.
And
the
then
guys that Carl's speaking
absolutely,
about right now.
I think... Main goal now is to make better workplaces where people feel more comfortable, better treated, and like we work humanely. You know, I think if anything coming out of all this corona crisis, we need to focus on ourselves. We need to, even as bartenders, we need to have it better ourselves. We need to have better personal lives. When we have time off, we need to take the time off. And that doesn't mean to come in on your day off to work on drinks. When you have a day off, you're off. And we need to look after ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's where the whole focus is right now.
Yeah.
I agree.
Wise words. Yeah. Yes. I wanted to ask one last question and then we're going to wrap it up. How do you see the future of agave spirits in Europe? What's going to happen in the next months and years in your view?
Huge question.
Of course, that's we've saved the best.
Can I record it?
I had a conversation with a friend I'm going to introduce Esteban to these coming days. Yesterday. No, 2 days ago at the Barking Dog. And what I think need to happen if we want to run somewhat, mezcal is going to grow. We can't stop it and we shouldn't stop it. We need to figure out how can we grow this in a more sustainable manner. And for me, at least, being white guy from Scandinavia. The answer doesn't come from Oaxaca. You know, yeah. We have to reach outside of Oaxaca. If we need pouring brands of like a sizable matter that seems to be the shortage, at least right now, we need to maybe go to other states and we need to set up serious companies.
Fucking hell, man.
With like great facilities that can produce high volume spirits of really high quality, but from a different state.
I cannot agree more, Carl. It's like, yeah, there is a situation with mezcal and there is a situation with the plants and there is a, yeah, the 90% is produced in Oaxaca. So if you think about it, the rest of the country is not in that stretch with their agaves. If the category grows too much, then it's a conversation for every state. But right now, it's not a conversation for every state. It's a conversation for Oaxaca. Mm. So,
Not Esteban has something to say about it, right?
What do you think about that? Yeah,
take an hour.
Do you have another hour? What do you think? It's an interesting. Just give one last. Yeah.
Truly, you want to take an hour?
No. Okay.
We might have to do this in another episode, but. Yeah. Carl, thank you so much for being here, being our guest. Thank you, Esteban, also for being our guest host today. I'm going to put all your information on the podcast. So if people want to get in touch with you, we're going to attach this to the episode.
Do you have the naked picture?
No.
No,
not yet. Okay.
Only to the paying subscribers.
Exactly. What's the name of that platform?
the Patreon channel.
Exactly, the Patreon. Only on the Patreon.
Only on the Patreon channel, which we don't have and probably never will have.
You can also check out my fans.
Exactly.
OnlyFans.
OnlyFans.
OnlyFans. Carl Rangel. Remember
naked,
this
naked
name.
Naked with agave.
So thank you guys for listening, also for reaching out to us. We had a couple of nice conversations with listeners of the show who reached out to us. We always enjoy that. Any suggestions, what you want to listen to next, we are happy for that and we are happy to get in touch with you.
Correct.
And yeah, hear you next time and thanks for listening.
Yeah. Carl, thanks again, man. This was amazing. And Esteban, thank you for co-hosting. And that's it. Now you can cut. Yeah.
Thank you so much for letting me have my voice here. It's going to be really nice to put the mic down and talk to you guys even more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you guys for inviting me. Don't forget to edit in me.
The shitty parts.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Ciao.